I take your this morning, turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. By the way, it's so good to have Anthony Lavelle with us in church this morning. We've been praying for him and to find a place to live here in Frederick, and the Lord answered that prayer. And the Lord still answers prayer, doesn't he? Even when we don't think there's any way that it'll work out. But he does. I was reading about an incident from the life of Charles Wesley, who's a very famous hymn writer. In fact, probably wrote more Christian hymns than just about any other person. We still sing some of his hymns, like "And Can It Be?" And he had been saved for about 2 months as a young man, when on July 18th of 1738, he decided that he and a friend by the name of Bray would go to the Newgate prison and share the gospel with those who were on death row. And Charles Wesley was still so excited about this new faith that he had received and the hope that he had in Jesus Christ that he just wanted to share it with everybody, but especially those that were facing death very soon. Those men that perhaps had no hope. He wanted to be able to share with them the hope of Jesus Christ. Now, Bray was kind of, according to Charles Wesley's description, was an ignorant mechanic, didn't know much, but he knew the Lord, and he loved people. So they went and they began to witness of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They told the men there on death row of Christ's suffering and sacrifice for them, of his death on the cross, and that it didn't matter how much sin a man had on his account, if he would turn and look to Jesus Christ, that God would forgive him and save him. Give him eternal life. Give him a home in heaven. That they would be adopted by the Father. Well, they were there witnessing to them, and they were starting to make some headway with the men. And visiting time was over. And Charles Wesley said to the warden, "Would it be all right if we were locked in with these men the night before their execution, that we might continue this discussion on salvation and the glories of the cross?" Of course, the warden thought they were crazy. Can you imagine being locked in with men who are going to be executed the next day for murder? I mean, what do they have to lose, right? They're going to be killed the next day, executed the next day. But Charles and his friend Bray just felt led of the Lord that this is what they must do. And so they spent the night before the execution sharing with them and discussing with them, leading these every single man to the Lord Jesus Christ, and then discipling them. Now, their ministry was going to be very short-lived, but they wanted to explain as much as they could in the short time they had. And so the next morning, they loaded up all of the men there on death row, put them in a cart to put a rope around each of their necks, because when they got to Tyburn, the place of execution, they would connect the ropes, drive the cart out from underneath them, and they would die by hanging. It was at this point that Charles Wesley wrote these words. "The men were all cheerful, full of comfort, peace, and triumph, assuredly persuaded that Christ had died for them and waited to receive them into paradise. The black saluted me with his looks. As often as his eyes met mine, he smiled with the most composed, delightful countenance I ever saw. We left them going to meet their Lord, ready for the bridegroom. When the cart drove off, not one stirred or struggled for life, but meekly gave up their spirits. Exactly at 12, they were turned off. I spoke a few suitable words to the crowd and returned, full of peace and confidence in our friends' happiness. That hour under the gallows was the most blessed hour of my life. that came from the Journal of Charles Wesley. How would you have liked to have spent your last a night with men who were facing their last hours? Men on death row. I'm sure, by the way, he would have had a much more comfortable night in his own bed at home. And yet this mentality of willing to give it all for the sake of the gospel of Jesus Christ has been the mentality of men and women who've given their hearts and lives to Jesus Christ over the millennia. In fact, in this passage this morning, 1 Corinthians 9, we're really going to see some paradoxes of Christian living. In fact, if I were to entitle this message, I would say, Paradoxes of Christian Service. He's basically going to say to us, you have authority, so yield your rights. You have a mandate, so joyfully serve. You have freedom, so become a slave. Boy, that's popular preaching in America today, right? Boy, that goes so counter to the way we want to live, right? We have authority. Well, we want to exercise that authority, right? We want to really show who's boss. I earned this. I deserve to be served. And yet the Christ-like way is to yield your rights. We have a mandate. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. To your Jerusalem, your Judea, your Samaria, so at home and abroad, and to the uttermost parts of the earth. We have a mandate. By the way, when somebody tells you to do something, do you joyfully serve? Usually not, right? When you have to do it, it's a duty. But what Paul says, hey, it's a mandate, so joyfully serve. And then he, of course, builds on this question he had asked in chapter 9, verse 1. He says, am I not free? And then in this passage this morning, he says, yes, I'm free to become a slave to all. It's exactly how our Lord Jesus Christ is, right? He came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. Let's take a look at our passage this morning and look at these and focus on these three paradoxes. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We're going to start in verse 15, but remember last week we were looking at verses 1 through 14. And again, I said this was kind of an awkward passage for me as a pastor to preach because it's all about the church tithing so that I have a salary. All right, and I'm hoping more of you are tithing now, right? So my salary will go higher and I can, buy nicer cars and airplanes and so forth. Because with airplanes, you're able to witness so much better with airplanes, you know. I'm being facetious, of course, right? But I think probably the pastor that looks at it in the wrong way skips these next couple of verses, right? Let's see what he has to say. But I have used none of these things. In other words, he's just said, look, a person who preaches the gospel, a pastor, missionary, they should expect to receive a reward for their labor. They should expect to receive the tithes and offerings of the people as they minister the service of God. He says, verse 15, but I have used none of these things. Now, I would deserve it, but I choose not to partake in these tithes and offerings. Neither have I written these things that it should be done unto me. For it were better for me to die. And in the Greek, it's hard to translate this into English well, but in the Greek, it's almost he's so. So emotional about this. You know, he's just made it very clear that you should not shortchange those who are ministering spiritual things to you. But he says, for me, I don't want to be perceived as being greedy or doing this for money. In fact, I would rather die than dot, 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 dot. And then he kind of collects himself and continues on here. And he says that no man should make my glorying void, that no man would nullify my ministry or take advantage or impugn my motives or see that I'm trying to sell the gospel, taking advantage of others. I don't want anyone to think that. Verse 16, for though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, preaching the gospel to others, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation or a stewardship of the gospel is committed unto me. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, without payment, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. By the way, there's a whole lot of television evangelists I wish would read this passage. Paul is concerned that he would abuse the authority given to him as an apostle to get advantage over spiritual ministry, over sharing the gospel. He doesn't want to become rich off the gospel or be perceived that way. Verse 19, for though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant, or literally here the Greek word is slave, unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, the Gentiles, as without law, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. And so this morning, if we could not remember anything else from this message except for this statement, then I would have communicated well, I believe, the message of this passage. Sacrifice for the sake of the gospel is worth it. Sacrifice for the sake of the gospel is worth it. And so why should we have this authority given to us? I mean, we're princes and princesses. We're a part of the family of God. We have a direct line with the creator of the universe. We have authority. But we should be willing to give all that up, yield our rights for the sake of others. I mean, we have a mandate, but we should joyfully serve. We have freedom in Christ, but we should give up that freedom to be slaves to others. Well, is this even worth it? And Paul says, yes. Sacrifice for the sake of the gospel. By the way, not sacrifice for sacrifice's sake, but sacrifice for the sake of the gospel is worth it. All right, let's break this passage down. Verse 15. Great blessing comes from denying one's rights. Great blessing comes from denying one's rights. And this is the first paradox. You have authority, so yield your rights. Verse 15 again. But if a woman... But I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that it should be done unto me. For it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. All right, so he's just spent the first 14 verses saying that as a minister of the gospel, he deserves, he has the right to receive financial remuneration, material blessings, material provision from the people. And so there's great confidence that comes in knowing that, hey, you know what? God has made me an apostle. God has called me to ministry. And by the way, it's always a wonderful thing for me as a pastor to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God has called me to be a pastor. There's great confidence that comes with knowing, hey, I didn't call myself to be the pastor here. In fact, frankly, this church didn't even call me to be the pastor here. The church recognized that God had called me to be the pastor here. And I recognized that God had called me to be the pastor here. And you have, if you've been in the church for any length of time, you've heard my testimony of how God worked all those circumstances in an incredible way to make it very clear that you were supposed to be here and I was supposed to be here. Oh, that's great confidence. And by the way, sometimes we need that confidence, right? Because we begin to wonder, doubt ourselves, and we see our own shortcomings and our failures, which there's lots of those, and yet we know, but God, you called me. This is your will. So Paul has spent a great amount of time rigorously defending his right to receive material possessions, to be a moral authority in their lives, to declare truth, the gospel. In fact, in Matthew 28, verse 18, Jesus makes this statement. All power, literally the Greek word there is all authority, is given unto me in heaven and in earth. And then he says this. So you go into all the world and preach the gospel. So Christ, and nobody would argue this, right? Christ is King of Kings. He's Lord of Lords. He's Creator of the universe. He is the Redeemer of mankind. He has all authority. He has all rights. And with that authority, he gives a commission to me. But it's not just to the pastor of the church that he's given this commission to. It's to all believers. Do you recognize this morning that God has given you authority to share the gospel of Jesus Christ to a lost and dying world? And so this week at work, your coworker says, comes in Monday, crestfallen. Maybe their spouse has just been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Maybe the company is struggling financially and they anticipate that they will lose their job later that week. So maybe you say to them, I can only imagine what you're going through. Would it be all right if I prayed for you? In fact, maybe tomorrow lunch, we could have lunch together, and I'd like to share some things with you of what God has taught me about the hope that we can have. You have that right and authority, by the way. God has granted it to you to take advantage of opportunities to change people's life, to give them hope, to give them offer peace, forgiveness, reconciliation with God. Maybe you set something up in an evening, maybe on a weekend. But God has put you in that place of work. God has put you in the neighborhood where you live. God has given you the family that you have, and then the authority to be able to share the truth with those people. We have the authority to evangelize and make disciples. And by the way, Jesus then gives the promise, and lo, I am with you always. Have you ever gotten frustrated? I know you have, because I've gotten frustrated, and I've talked to my wife, she's gotten frustrated, when you're talking, and you just don't know what to say. And you just like feel like you're fumbling all over yourself. And like it didn't quite come out right. And then like 3 hours later, you say, oh, why didn't I say such and such? You know, oh, man, that's okay. Christ is with you. If you had done everything that you wanted to do, you probably would have messed it up. Christ has promised as you take this authority that he's given you to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, lo, I am with you always. So there's confidence that comes with this authority that is given. And yet, the fact of the matter is that respect comes when people see the sacrifice that you make for them. If you look back at verse 12 in this passage, he says in the last part of the verse, nevertheless, we have not used this power, this authority, but we suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Paul was ready to not take advantage of people financially. He could have. He could have received financial support from them. But he was willing to give up those rights to sacrifice for their sake, for the sake of the gospel. Thus, Paul is preaching the gospel without pay. It was a calculated decision so as not to hinder the gospel. When people, how do people know that you care about them? When they see you making sacrifice for them. When you find out that they're going to be moving on Saturday and you offer to help them free of charge. I mean, they can't even get their friends to come help them move. I mean, who wants to move a piano, right? Who wants to move a refrigerator or a hide-a-bed? Who wants to put all of the furniture in the truck in just the way so that it actually doesn't fall out of the truck and you can actually fit it all in one trip? And it's incredible work, right? Nobody wants to do that kind of thing. But you begin to sacrifice for the sake of the gospel. Now you've got their ear. They know you're different. You care. What is this all about? You know, when we have the authority or the right and we refuse that, we don't demand our rights, there's great opportunities. By the way, how many times in our culture today are we tempted to say, you know, I have a right to be treated with respect around here? Okay, you do have that right. But one that's going to be effective in preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ and impacting lives for eternity is somebody who's willing to give up that right, those rights. Well, verses 16 through 18, we see great blessing comes from willingly declaring the gospel. You have a mandate. Go! Preach the gospel. And we can do that, and we must do that. But do we do so joyfully? Great commission living is an expectation. We see that. Verse 16, for though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. It's not like Paul is this great person because he's preaching the gospel because God told him to do it. You know, okay, so a school administrator says to his teachers, you know, I'd like to have the attendance in the morning in the office. And the teacher takes the attendance and sends it to the office. The school administrator is not saying, oh, this is the greatest teacher ever. No, they're just supposed to do that, right? Just an expectation. Now, of course, if you disobey, right, then they're the worst teacher ever, right? But the expectation is, say, this is just expected. This is a mandate. This is what you're told to do. And so Paul is saying, for though I preach the gospel, okay, that's nothing special. That's nothing to glory in. For necessity is laid upon me. This was something that God told me I had to do. In fact, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. So he's saying that it's nothing special if I preach it, but if I'm not preaching it, then that's disobedience. I'm not sharing the gospel of Christ with others. That's just flat-out disobedience. This is what God had wired him for. What are God's expectations for you? Well, you may not be called to be a full-time pastor or missionary or Christian school teacher, or maybe you work a, you know, 9-to-5 job. I mean, who works those anymore, right? Maybe you work just a regular job, lots of hours, lots of hard work, lots of things going on. Maybe you're trying to find a job that will allow you to earn money. But regardless of where we are, what stage of life, what we're doing, God has given us a command, a mandate. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel. Nothing special if you do it, but it is disobedience if you don't. In fact, obedience should not be predicated on receiving blessing. Verse 17, "For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a stewardship of the gospel is committed unto me." I wrestled with this verse for quite a bit. What in the world is he saying here? Is he saying that if you willingly preach the gospel, then you get a reward? I don't think that's what it's saying here. I think what Paul is trying to say is, now if God had not commanded me to do this and I had done it willingly, then I would receive a reward. But the fact is, God had commanded him to do it. And so it's not like he gets... Okay, so for instance, so the teacher that brings the attendance to the school office in the morning, the school administrator doesn't say, "Oh, here's a bonus, $500 bonus for doing this." No, they don't get a bonus for doing that. It was just what you were supposed to do. It was just part of the contract, right? Part of the requirements. You just do it. And so it is that... if one is free and works voluntarily, then he's entitled to pay, to a reward afterwards. But Paul is not doing this voluntarily. He's been commanded to do this by God, and therefore should anticipate no extra pay, so to speak, no reward. In fact, he is, the last part of the verse, he has been entrusted with a stewardship, a dispensation of the gospel. And this idea of stewardship, this was a slave that was responsible to take care of the household affairs. Kind of like Joseph, right? In Potiphar's house. Joseph, as he's working there and taking care of Potiphar's stuff, Joseph's not getting rich off of this. In fact, he's not getting anything from this. He's a slave! And Paul is just reminding us, look, if we've been given this dispensation, this stewardship of the gospel, then don't think like God owes you a lot of reward for this. And just because you're obedient doesn't mean that you deserve blessing. Now, by the way, this is the way our God is, though. He blesses us so richly. I just think of this as a parent and now as a grandparent. You know, I've got two little girls now. In fact, my youngest one just turned 2 on 02-02-2020. She turned 2. And, you know, you're so excited as a grandparent when they do the right thing, right? And, boy, you're just ready to shower them with blessing, with that hug or kiss or candy or whatever, because you want to really reinforce the good behavior, right? And you're so proud of them, and because when they're really young, it seems like you're always negative, right? No, don't touch that. No, don't touch that. You know, everything's not touchable, right? It seems. And there's certain places they can't go, like the bathroom. And so you're just always, so you want to be positive as much as possible and reinforce good behavior. And every time they do just the littlest, tiniest thing, like they pick up the wrapper that they just dropped. Oh, this is like reason for celebration, right? The biggest thing. And they just picked up a wrapper, you know? How our God must be like that. So ready to reinforce the good behavior because he loves us so much. And it must bring great joy to him when we do the littlest right thing. Notice what he says in verse 18. What is my reward then? Verily that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge. Here's my reward. That I don't get paid for what I'm doing. So, no pay is my pay. But he also says that he does this so that he is not beholden to anyone. Nobody's got strings attached to him. He's not responsible to anyone but God, so he has freedom to minister to all. By the way, I think a good application of this verse, when I go out and I invite somebody to People's Baptist Church, and they find out that, you know, I hand them a tract, and they, oh, wait, this is you on there. You're the pastor there? Yes, I'm the pastor. Okay, no wonder you want me to come to this church, right? Because you're the pastor of this church. Oh, you want me to get saved, so I'll give more money to your church, right? And all of this. Yeah. But when a person who's just, you're not a pastor of the church, you're just attend the church, you're a member of the church. You say, hey, are you a pastor? No, I'm just a Christian who loves the Lord and saved by grace. And oh, you know what? There's actually more power in that kind of testimony than a pastor talking to them. Great blessing comes to those who deny their rights. Great blessing comes to those who joyfully serve. And third, great blessing comes from being a slave. You have freedom, so become a slave. Let's look at verse 19. I think he's kind of picking up from that statement he made in verse 1 of this chapter. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself a slave unto all, that I might gain the more. By the way, this same mentality is absolutely critical in marriage. When you have a wife who says, I demand my rights, you're going to have problems. When you have a husband who says, I demand my rights, don't you know God made me the ruler in this home, so you must serve me, you got problems, I'll just tell you. But when the husband yields his rights, when the wife yields her rights, you will have sweet fellowship. But what happens if only one yields their rights? That's okay because you're a slave. You're a slave. That's the only way some marriages are going to work out, if one is at least willing to follow the example of Christ, who came not to be ministered unto, but to minister. If you want to have the right kind of home, the right kind of family, the right kind of marriage, you have to be willing to give up your rights. It's not about you. It's all about Christ and the sake of the gospel. And how are those children going to learn to give up their rights and surrender to God if they don't see their parents modeling that? You have freedom, so become a slave. Of course, in the passage here, chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 10, one of the illustrations, kind of a running illustration, is eating meat that had been offered unto idols. And this was kind of an illustration of Paul's freedom and limitation. He's really dealing with two of the objections that are coming up against him from people that were shooting at him. Some of the church were saying, oh, look, you're just in it for the money. And Paul's saying, no, look, I didn't take any money from you. And then some are saying, well, he doesn't think we're good enough. He doesn't take our money. It's like, well, okay, well, the reason I'm not taking your money is because of this, as we see in this passage, because I don't want people to think I'm in it for the money. And so I'm willing to give up my rights for your sake and for the sake of the gospel. And then some people were saying, well, look, he eats meat offered to idols with the Gentiles, but he doesn't do it with the Jews. Okay, so now he's got to deal with this. I have the freedom to eat anything I want. Remember, Jesus said it's not what goes into the mouth that defiles a man, what comes out of the mouth. By the way, there are missionaries today who are serving in certain countries that will not eat pork. It's not because they believe that pork makes them an infidel or somehow they lose their salvation, but it would be highly offensive to the people they're trying to reach. So why would you put an obstacle, a stumbling block? You can survive without eating meat. In Israel, by the way, they have a rule that you cannot eat in the same meal, you cannot eat meat and dairy. So if you have like cheese, you cannot have meat. And if you have meat, you cannot have cheese. So you will not be able to eat a bacon cheeseburger in Israel. There's a lot of problems with that, okay? So what do the Christians do in Israel? They don't eat bacon cheeseburgers. You know what? They worship on Saturday. They have church on Saturday. Why? It would be highly offensive to the people they're trying to reach if they didn't follow the Sabbath law, according to their, you know, the Jewish brethren around. And by the way, it'd be very difficult. Can you imagine trying to go to church on Monday morning here? So Sunday morning is like Monday morning. And so, I mean, you'd be missing work right now. That would only happen so long, right? And so they meet, have church on Saturday. They don't eat bacon cheeseburgers in Israel. A lot of Muslim countries where you're not eating any kind of pork. The motive here for all of this is to win more people. Look at verse 19 again. That I might gain the more. Look at verse 22, the last part. That I might by all means save some. The motive? Opportunities to have a ministry with more people and not unnecessarily offend them or turn them away from the gospel. And so it was that the Moravian brethren, who took this very literally, it was the year was 1732, August 25th, two men by the name of Leonard Dober, David Nishman, one was a potter, one was a carpenter, they lived in a small village called Herrnhut. They were Moravian brethren. These were men, families that had become Christians because of the testimony of John Huss, the martyr. They had received terrible persecution where they were living, and so they went to Saxony and ended up settling in Count Zinzendorf's property. Count Zinzendorf was a born-again believer. And it was interesting. They caught a vision for missions. Now, this is in the 1720s, 1730s. They caught a vision for missions. And they decided that they were going to start praying that the gospel could be spread all across the world. And they decided to have a continuous 24/7 prayer meeting. And they did it by people taking turns. And they just decided that every minute of every day they would be praying for missions. And so somebody would take this 30-minute slot, somebody would take this 30-minute slot. You know, they continuously prayed 24/7 for 100 years. It was from the early 1700s to the early 1800s that they prayed for the cause of foreign missions. Well, you can imagine it, because they were praying for missions. they started to kind of get a burden for missions. And so in 1732, two of their first ones sent out were these two men. One was a potter, one was a carpenter. And they felt led by the Lord to go to the island of St. Thomas. A freed slave had given his testimony in the Heron Hut village, had shown the whip, scars of the whip on his back. And he had become a Christian and was burdened for his sister and his friends and family on that island. And it so moved these two men that they volunteered to go. Well, they almost weren't even allowed to go because the Dutch government, or Dutch or Danish government, owned that property. And like, you're going to create problems. Don't go. Finally, they were given the green light to go, and they went. When they got there, they realized the only way they were going to be able to reach the slaves was by becoming slaves themselves. To work the sugarcane plantations. And so they gave up their freedom and became slaves. And so it was that in 1732, the gospel of Jesus Christ came to the Virgin Islands and began to spread. 1733, they sent missionaries to Greenland. 1734, missionaries to North America. 1735, to Lapland and South America. And then finally, 1736, to South Africa. And then finally, in 1771, to Labrador. And the Moravian Brethren, not well-educated, not professionals in any way, just a burden for sharing the gospel, would take it all around the world and would become really the forerunners of the modern-day missions movement and would impact the world for Jesus Christ. But it started with a couple of guys that were willing to become slaves to reach the slaves. We see the motive, we see the means here, verses 20 to 23, to identify with everyone. They were willing to appeal to the self-righteous without being legalistic, in verse 20. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. And so it was that they were willing, Paul was willing to identify with the Jews. He was a Jew himself. He had been a Pharisee himself, but he recognized, I'm no longer under all of these Old Testament laws. I'm free in Christ, but he was willing to sacrifice those rights for the sake of the Jewish people he was trying to reach. Remember, he even took the advice of James when he came to Jerusalem to pay the vows of those that had taken the Nazirite vow, to offer those sacrifices. But Paul was willing to abstain with those under the law, not because he had to, but because he loved them and didn't want to create unnecessary obstacles. And so it is today. That's why the believers in Israel do what they do. Not because they have to, but because they love the Lord and they love the people they're trying to reach. We see in verse 21, the appeal to the sinner without being licentious. So he's appealing to the self-righteous without being legalistic, but he's also appealing to the sinner without being licentious. Verse 21, to them that are without law, as without law. So I'm willing to do what I can to identify with them. But he notices, he says, now, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ. So, okay, I'm not going to go into the bars and drink with them. Carouse. So that, hey, I'm just one of the guys and they'll listen to me. By the way, that doesn't work. People are not impressed when you're just like their sinful ways, okay? They want to be released from their sinful ways. They want hope from their sinful ways. This is crazy. I've seen people. There's one guy, there's a big article, I think it was in one of the Christian magazines. It's like they're all like promoting this guy was going to go live in the French Quarter in New Orleans, and he's going to be a bar missionary to the bars. You know how long that lasted? Oh, like weeks. And his life was a total mess. You don't reach people by being like them in their sin. Now, by the way, Christ reached sinners. He even ate with them. And that infuriated the self-righteous. But somehow Jesus, and by the way, we know Jesus never sinned, right? Paul makes that clear. Peter makes that clear. Like, everybody makes that clear, right? Scriptures tell us very clear. So somehow he's able to eat with publicans and sinners and prostitutes and not sin. And by the way, his testimony is very effective, leading them to Christ. Appeal to the sinner without being licentious. So it is. There are some places in the world where people believe if you wear makeup, you're sinning. So if you go there, ladies, don't wear makeup. Men, don't wear makeup. Some places in the world where if you wear a tie, that's a sin. Well, I want to go minister there, right? Okay, so you don't wear a tie there. By the way, when I went to New Zealand, coat and tie. That was the expectation. When I went to Papua New Guinea, no coat or tie there. That would be distracting. And so it is. You are, as Paul says, all things to all men, that you might reach some. Appeal to the weak without losing focus. To the weak became I as weak, verse 22, that I might gain the weak. I made all things to all men that I might by all means save some. And the reason I say this, appeal to the weak without losing focus, how often well-meaning Christians will start some sort of social program, like a food bank or a rescue mission or something to help those who are really struggling. And their goal is to be able to give them the gospel while they're meeting their physical needs. And so at first, the gospel is the priority. That's why we're starting this good mission thing. And over time, it's the gospel on the same level as the good works thing. And then over time, it's just the good works. You see, the world will pat you on the back for the good works. Look how many people you've fed. Wow, that's great. Look how many homes you've built. Oh, that's wonderful. Look how many lives you've helped. Oh, that's great. They're not so quick with the applause when it's spiritual work you're doing. And you're saying, you know, you're a sinner. And you need to trust Jesus Christ alone for salvation. Now that's not popular. And you get shot at. And people don't like you as much. And the donations drop off. I don't think there's anything wrong with social programs and helping people if we keep our focus on the gospel. But when we have to kind of water the gospel down or just kind of sneak it in through the back door, pretty soon you're not going to have any gospel at all. By the way, I've seen this. And if you've lived any amount of time, right, you've seen this. Every organization over time, this happens, right? Any social organization, any mission, anything like this over time, if they lose their focus on the gospel, it is no longer effective. This is a good reminder to me, too. I constantly have to remind myself, when I do a good deed for somebody, help get their car out of the ditch or let them go, you know, take the last thing on the shelf or whatever it is, you know, you do something and they're like, oh, well, thank you very much. That was very kind. Time to give them a gospel tract, right? What good is it if they just think, oh, that was a nice thing he did, if you don't follow it up with a gospel tract? Great opportunity. Let's not lose focus. All Paul does is for the gospel's sake. Verse 23, and this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Oh, I want to enjoy the blessings of the gospel with you. I'm willing to give up my rights. I'm willing to joyfully serve, even though it's commanded of me. I'm willing to be a slave and serve, all for the sake of the gospel. And by the way, that's no different than what Jesus modeled. 2 Corinthians 8:9, "For ye know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye, through his poverty, might be rich." Are we willing to sacrifice all for the sake of the gospel? It's a very sobering question. What are you unwilling to give up? Maybe your time. Hey, we're going to go canvassing. Oh, I don't want to go canvassing. That's on a Saturday morning. I could be doing so many other things, you know. Or sometimes it's your reputation. Well, you know, so-and-so, he's a religious nut. And word gets around at work. Or maybe that relative gets angry. Sacrifice for the sake of the gospel, though, is worth it. Let's pray.